you know, it seemed as if swine flu, or H1N1 as it was subsequently dubbed, was a big, big deal just a few months ago. And then it kind of fell off the radar screen, didn't it? I mean, we keep hearing reports about it. We see that the World Health Organization says this and other health experts say that. But it doesn't really seem like that be-all, end-all pandemic that we've been warned about. Contrast this, though, with what's going on just this week in India, where panic rules the day. About 20 people have died so far. About 1,300 or so people have been confirmed infected. And mind you, this is a nation of 1.2 billion, and yet lining up out on the streets outside of hospitals. They're wearing surgical masks to protect themselves. Nobody knows what to think. In fact, here's a little something that was on the news in India just the other day.
The disease is spreading at an alarming rate. Pune recorded its 13th swine flu death, taking the total number of deaths across India to 21, with Pune alone registering 13 deaths. Also in Pune, an 11-month-year-old baby died at 2:30 in the morning today. And earlier this morning, another H1N1 death was recorded in Bangalore after 26-year-old Rupa Anand died in Philomena Hospital. 11 more tested positive for H1N1 there today. And a worried health ministry has asked people to avoid going to crowded places during Janmashtami, which begins tomorrow, in order to prevent the H1N1 virus from spreading. Also, Delhi Transport Minister's two sons tested positive for swine flu. They're currently quarantined at home. Meanwhile, three patients are said to be critical in Delhi's Ram Manohar Lohia Hospital. My first question to Ghulam Nabi Azad.
All right. I mean, that's how they're talking about it overseas, where it seems as if this is a raging concern. Well, to help us understand more about what's going on, what you should know, and what you should do, we are joined by Regina Phelps. She is a San Francisco healthcare consultant, expert on pandemics, and my all-around favorite angel of doom. Ms. Phelps, thank you very much for joining us.
David, it's a delight to be with you tonight.
All right. So you just heard that clip from India where it's the number one story. Everyone's buzzing about it. There's panic in the streets. You look over here at the United States, it's radio silence. No one's talking about that. Is it a problem there but not here?
No, actually, it still is a problem here in the United States, although not to the level that you're seeing currently in India. But there are cases all over the Bay Area, all over California. The California Department of Public Health still has their Emergency Operations Center open, and it's still a major issue right now as we're bracing for the return of it in a more significant number in the fall.
Now, I saw a report that the World Health Organization had essentially acknowledged that it had reached pandemic proportions, and in fact it said it's futile to keep counting the numbers because we just can't keep track of it anymore. That sounds really scary.
Well, you know, when you stop and think about it, there's no way they can really truly count numbers anymore. The only way that you would actually know if somebody had H1N1 or swine flu is to do a laboratory analysis. And in the last month or so here in the United States, 90% of all cases of influenza have been the H1N1 virus. So most states, and including California, have decided they're not going to be doing any further testing, because if you present to a hospital or to a clinic with flu-like symptoms, 9 times out of 10, it's going to be H1N1, and the treatment will not vary. If you end up being seriously ill, though, and end up going to a hospital and are admitted, they definitely would do a test for it. But for the average person who's going to recover without any complications, it's really a waste to do a test.
Am I allowed to say swine flu, or do we have to say H1N1?
David, you can say whichever you prefer, but the true medical terminology is novel H1N1, but most folks do call it swine flu.
Swine flu has so much more pizzazz, let's say. Let's face it. All right, so if 9 out of 10 cases of influenza these days are, in fact, swine flu, but I look around and people aren't just dropping in the streets, is this perhaps not something that we need to be worried about so much?
That's a really good question, and if you look at the last century, there were 3 pandemics, and of course the one that everybody points to is the Spanish flu of 1918, but in 1957 and 1968 we had significant widespread illness. It was a mild pandemic, but back then, still there was a lot of people that were hospitalized and a lot of people that died. And I think the thing to think about, David, is this, is that even if it's a mild pandemic, CDC is already forecasting that we'd have 4 to 5 times the number of deaths that we normally do, which is 36,000, so, you know, rack that up, that could be 150,000 deaths from the flu, and we could have about 4 to 5 times the number of hospitalizations, which would take us from 200,000 a year up to about 800,000 or a million, and that will overwhelm the healthcare system in this country.
And as you just alluded to a moment ago, the experts are saying, hey, it's not even flu season yet. Wait until the fall and the winter roll around and swine flu rears up again at the time when it's at its strongest.
Absolutely. And I think what you're going to see very quickly here, as the schools are now getting back into session at the end of this month, is you'll start to see within the next few weeks a significant rise in cases, because young children, also all the way up into university ages, are going to be in, you know, tight classrooms, they're going to be spreading disease and viruses, and we're going to see a large number of cases. So we're not even going to have to wait till October or November. It's going to be here pretty much around the second week of September.
Are we expecting swine flu or H1N1 to evolve and mutate and become even more dangerous?
That's a very good question. The thing about influenza that you need to stop and think about is this, David, is that every day that virus has the potential to change. It's one of the most mutatable viruses there is. So that means that literally any time it can change. And I think the hard thing for people to understand about what we're facing is there are two difficult facts. One is that we don't know what's going to happen. We have no idea whether it will change. It certainly could. It may not. And the second other thing is that there's really no quick medical fix. Vaccines are in production. It's going to take a while to make them. And when they first start coming out, they're going to be in very limited supplies and given to the priority list recognized by the government, which will happen probably sometime in October, but they're not even saying that yet.
Our guest is Regina Phelps. She's a San Francisco-based healthcare consultant and expert in pandemics. If you have questions for Ms. Phelps, please bring them on. I also have a question for you, and that is, are you concerned about swine flu? And if not, why not? Why is it that this isn't a concern for you? 808-0810 is the number. Again, that's 808-0810. Your questions for Regina Phelps. Also, your thoughts on, is swine flu at least something that you even are concerned about? 808-0810. You can also email me at kgoradio.com. I'm David Lazarus. You're listening to KGO.
There's a
behind this KGO News Talk 810.
Yeah, don't want that swine flu. No, sanitize my hands, put my mask on.
You're listening to KGO. I'm David Lazarus. Sanitize my hand. We're talking about swine flu. Our guest is Regina Phelps. She's a San Francisco healthcare consultant and an expert on pandemics. I've had her on the show several times before. She really knows her stuff. We're talking about, well, you know, if swine flu isn't as big a deal as we thought, why is it spreading so far, and how big a deal could it be now that flu season is coming around, now that our kids are heading back to school? Your questions, your comments about swine flu are very welcome. 808-0810 is the number. Again, that's 808-0810. You can also email me from the website at kgoradio.com. Stan calling from Redwood City. Welcome to the program. Stan, you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
You're on the air.
I just wanted to let you know that I think that the whole swine flu thing is a little bit overblown. I mean, it's been around for however long the influenza disease has been around, and calling it the swine flu and even having shows about it is like, is there no other news? I mean, how long has this been on the news?
So, Stan, basically because bodies aren't gathering in the streets and people aren't falling over on Muni or BART, you're figuring that this isn't such a big deal.
I think that those people are sick, and this has been happening, and people have been doing, you know, people have done that before you've called it the swine flu. I mean, if people are sick, they need to go to the hospital. But saying there's a pandemic, and, you know, I don't see that. I just see a lot of media coverage.
Stan, thank you for your call, Stan. I appreciate it. Regina Phelps, what's the answer to that?
You know, really the issue I think is this, is that most people don't realize that this particular virus has never existed before. So yes, influenza has existed for over 500 years, but this virus has only been around, as far as they can tell, with the genetics of it, since sometime this spring. It actually is a virus that contains one part human influenza. It contains two parts bird influenza and five parts pig influenza, and it has recombined in a human to create this disease. So even though, yes, it's influenza, this particular type of influenza has never existed before, which means every single person on the planet can get ill. And
in other words, we don't have the defenses against something like this.
Correct. No one has any immunity to this. There has been some belief that older people that were born before 1957 have some immunity because there might have been some similar strains that might have floated around in that prior period. But certainly young people have had no exposure at all.
All right, but so we're all going to be sneezing and have running noses, or is it worse than that?
Well, we certainly could be sneezing or have running noses, but a good example of why this is a particular concern is, look at, for example, the issue that's happened to pregnant women. Currently, right now, in California, there's about 1 or 2% of the population that becomes pregnant in any given year. 6% of those, of people with the H1N1 have been pregnant women. So statistically, it's off. And then 8% of the fatalities have been pregnant women. So healthy pregnant women who die of influenza.
What does that tell us?
Pardon me?
What does that tell us? That there's something about the state of pregnancy that makes you more vulnerable to the more troublesome aspects of this influenza?
Yes, it does. I mean, what happens is that you're a little bit more immunosuppressed. You have a lot going on in your body. And those women, especially in the third trimester, who have gotten this influenza, have had very serious conditions. And just even a month or two ago, there was actually 5 women on ventilators in the Bay Area that were pregnant.
And it's worth pointing out that when the Spanish flu reared its head in the early 20th century, same deal. We'd never seen it before. We'd not have the defenses against it. And as many as 50 million people got killed.
Correct. And also the parallel between this pandemic and the 1918 pandemic is that this pandemic likes younger people. It's very different than seasonal flu, which likes the very, very young and also people over the age of 65. This particular virus, the average age of serious infection is 12. And the issue of real illness is between the ages of 5 and 24. And anybody over 65 has very little problem with this disease.
Your questions for pandemic expert Regina Phelps are very welcome, as are your comments on this topic. Do you think concerns about swine flu are overblown? 808-0810 is the number. Again, that's 808-0810. You can also email me at kgoradio.com. I'm David Lazarus. You're listening to KGO.
KGO News Talk 810.
Me, you, swine flu. Me, you.
This is KGO. I'm David Lazarus. We're talking swine flu with pandemic expert Regina Phelps. Your questions and comments are very welcome. 808-0810 is the number. Shell calling from Fremont. Welcome to the program.
Hi, David. Great show. I love your show. Thanks for taking my call. And I think it's a great topic. The question I have is, let's say, for example, if one gets a swine flu and let's say, for example, the person is treated and they are okay, can they again get the swine flu infection?
That's a very good question, and I think I'll give you an answer that may sound strange. It depends. If the virus does not change between now, when that person becomes infected, and then later on, they will not get the disease again. However, the reason that we all require an annual seasonal flu shot is because even the seasonal flu changes every year. So it could be possible that a person could get the illness now, the H1N1, and then maybe 6 months or a year later actually get it again, simply because the virus has changed, and it's like a different shade of red. So it's still the same kind of virus, but it's a little bit different.
Shell, thank you very much for that call. Appreciate that. And Ms. Phelps, that's the thing about viruses that's so intriguing, is they're mutate. What is the word? Mutability? Adaptability? Whatever it is, the little critters can change so quickly, and a strain that might have been contained only to, say, birds or pigs can very quickly jump to humans,
right,
and suddenly it's a whole other thing.
And that part of that is because the virus has very poor ability in replication, and it's kind of sloppy. So what happens is it replicates rapidly in the body, and it's not very good at making copies of itself. So it leaves pieces and parts off, if you will. And also your reference about pigs is that pigs' immune systems and humans are very similar. And what can happen is that we can actually infect pigs. And, in fact, that's happened in a couple of places in Canada and in Argentina where a person with H1N1 actually infected a flock or I'm not sure you call it a group of pigs in a farm.
Well, statistically speaking, considering that swine flu has spread rapidly but hasn't really cut a huge swath of destruction and death, is it likely that this is going to be a mild pandemic, or at any moment can this turn into the towering inferno?
That's a great question. The CDC has currently characterized this as a moderate pandemic, which means they have the following numbers for us, which is in seasonal flu, we normally have 0.1% of the population die. They're forecasting 0.5% will die. Instead of having, you know, again, that 200,000 hospitalizations, we're looking at 1 million plus, and that's with no changes in the virus. So just stop and think about that. That means it's very likely that we're all going to know somebody who's very sick. We might know somebody who dies in this pandemic simply because of the number increase. And often it's going to be young people between the ages of 5 and 25. And that's going to be much harder for our society to cope with than somebody who's 70 or 80 years old.
We're speaking with Regina Phelps. She's a San Francisco-based healthcare consultant and expert on pandemics. She's taking our calls about swine flus. Your questions are very welcome, as are your thoughts about this disease in general. Is it something you're worried about? Is it something the coverage of which you feel is overblown? Or do you think that perhaps we're not paying enough attention to this problem? 808-0810 is the number. Again, that's 808-0810. You can also email me at kgoradio.com. I'm David Lazarus.
KGO News Talk 810.
Get ready, my dear friends. We're all going to die of swine flu. Of swine flu.
It's like the whole swine flu cottage industry and the music industry popping up. I'm David Lazarus. You're listening to KGO. We're talking swine flu, and we are joined by Regina Phelps. She's a San Francisco-based healthcare consultant and pandemic expert, and it must be said she gave up a night at the theater this evening to join us and share her expertise. So we're very fortunate. I was looking around online today, and I saw some of the headlines that were out there this week. 67 U.S. soldiers in Iraq have contracted swine flu so far, and two leading rabbis in Israel have said that next Thursday should be devoted to prayer to combat swine flu. And they've blamed the spread of swine flu in Israel on public sinning. Well, Regina Phelps, that has a very biblical ring to it.
It does, but I don't think that public sinning is going to contribute to this issue of swine flu, but it's an interesting way to look at it. I think the way that we're going to actually spread this disease is not by public sinning, but primarily by simply the act of breathing, because this disease is simply spread by droplets that come out of our mouth when we cough and sneeze and breathe. So it's not probably so much sinning. It's really just the act of living that causes it to spread.
Now, I've heard that it's not so much the guy standing next to me on BART who sneezes nearby me, but rather I touch something and then my fingers go to my mouth or my eyes, and before you know it, I'm in trouble.
Well, actually, it's a little bit of both, but absolutely. I think what happens is that viruses live on inanimate objects for about 24 hours. So if you imagine that somebody coughed into their hands, they then touched a doorknob, you came right behind them, you touched that same doorknob, and then, you know, 5 minutes later, you scratch your nose, you readjust your glasses, you rub your eyes, and actually the way that virus then gets into your lungs is you simply breathe it into your lungs. And so we constantly are infecting ourselves. So I always ask our clients, I say, you know, just count how many times you touch your face between now and when you go to bed, and you're going to be horrified. We do it all the time.
Ms. Phelps, you are so freaking me out right now.
Do
David.
I mean, you know, I mean, we all, as soon as you said that, we all, I'm sure, took mental inventory of all the times we touched something. I mean, I'm thinking like at the gym. You know, I'm touching all this stuff that maybe hundreds of people have been touching. And yes, I'm going to wash my hands before I go. But during the workout, hands are coming to my ew. You know, it sounds as if you can't even fight it. If it's going around, it's going to get you.
Well, you know, I think the thing is that it's real. There's three things that you can really do that help. And I know they sound so lame, but it's really true. Washing your hands a lot is really a smart thing to do. And it would probably prevent you from getting a lot of illnesses. And if you can't wash your hands, carry around some hand sanitizer, put it in your pocket, and just put it on your hands. If you touch something and you think, gee, I gotta wash my hands, put some hand sanitizer on.
Does that really work? I always felt like it was a placebo for paranoid people like me.
Well, you know, there have been lots of studies that have been done about that, David, and the most recent one last month said that it's not quite as good as washing your hands, but it's pretty darn close. But when you buy it, you want to make sure that it has at least 60% alcohol in it. Otherwise, it will not be very effective.
But I remember when this whole thing reared its head not that long ago, and they were canceling cruises to Mexico, and it was a big deal, and everyone in the office where I work, we all brought in Purell and other hand sanitizers on all of our desks, and we were all, you know, rubbing our hands like Lady Macbeth all day long. And I don't know, I guess it works. It just feels like it's more panacea than anything else.
Yeah, but you know, it really does work. And I think if you can actually do keep your hands clean, it will make a huge difference. And the last thing that you really need to think about is, well, how we can all help each other is how we cough. And you know, when I was a kid, we were taught to cough into our hands to block our cough. But if you stop and think about that, that's an incredibly lame idea. If you cough into your hands, then of course, then you spread it every place you touch something. So your child, I bet your son has been taught how to cough by coughing into his arm or his elbow, and that's how we should do it. So we block our cough, but we don't use our hands.
808-0810 is the number. Julie calling from San Mateo. Welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks. You know, I just wanted to ask, I've been reading a lot lately about how factory farming is contributing, of pigs, or is contributing to the swine flu epidemic, and, you know, the cramped quarters that they're kept in, allowing spread of disease and overuse of antibiotics, and how all this is contributing to this disease. I'm wondering if anything's being done at that level to, you know, quell the problem.
Thanks for the call, Julie.
Thanks.
Question. I think that the issue of factory farming both in swine but also in birds, because if you recall not that long ago we were worried about avian or bird flu. Same thing is that when you have animals in unnatural conditions crammed together, they're going to exchange a lot of viruses and bacteria. They're going to be a lot more illness, and then they do suppress it. As to whether that would be a cause of why we're having this odd combination of part human, part pig, and part bird flu, it's hard to say, but I think certainly it does contribute to a lot of different diseases and also antibiotic resistance.
Do we have any idea of what percentage of flus that are prevalent in the animal or bird community can actually make the jump to humans?
There's actually 144 different kinds of influenza. There's 9 different versions of what's called the H, hemagglutinin, and there's 10 of neuraminidases. And so when you combine them together, you have 144 possibilities. There is actually the H1s can pass, the H5s can pass, and the H7s can pass. So there's quite a few of them.
We're talking with Regina Phelps. She's a healthcare consultant, pandemic expert, and total angel of doom. Ms. Phelps, you must be like the scariest date ever. You know, dinner table conversations. So what do you do? And before you know it, you're scaring the bejeepers out of everybody.
Either everybody wants to talk to me or no one wants to talk to me.
There you go. We want to talk to you. We're very glad you're here. Your questions for Regina Phelps, your comments about swine flu are very welcome. 808-0810 is the number. Again, that's 808-0810. You can also email me at kgoradio.com. I'm David Lazarus. You're listening to KGO.
KGO News Talk 810.
Cover your mouth before you sneeze. This will help you prevent disease. Wash your hands, this is something you must understand.
You're listening to KGO. I'm David Lazarus. Anthony Young is our engineer, and he's been coming up with all these tunes tonight. That one's a winner. That one comes like right out of Schoolhouse Rock, I think. That one's really good. We're joined by Regina Phelps. She's a healthcare consultant and expert on pandemics. We're talking about everything we need to know about swine flu, which was a big story in the United States a month or two ago. Now, not so much. A huge story overseas. Could be coming back real soon as flu season kicks up. Ms. Phelps, I'm looking at an email here from a guy named Bob. He says, I'm 71 years old and have never had a flu shot in my life. Don't see any reason to start now. I'm presently just getting over a rompin' good case of the flu. If it's true that 9 out of 10 cases of flu these days is swine flu, then I probably just had it. Is that so?
I'm sure he probably did have swine flu. And the good thing about being, certainly in this case, if you're over the age of 50 and you do get swine flu, your chances of having a mild illness are probably pretty darn good. So he should consider Bob your lucky man.
Does that make him immune? I mean, has he had it and he's good now?
Yeah, as long as the virus does not change from its current configuration of genetics, Bob will be able to survive the next rest of this pandemic with probably not getting the disease again.
So in a sense, getting it now before flu season kicks up as opposed to getting it during flu season is the right way to play it if you're going to have your number up.
You know, there was actually a lot of stuff circulating on the Internet about you should have a swine flu party when this first started, about having somebody come over to your house and infecting everybody. I don't know if it's very far, kind of like chicken pox or mumps in the old days.
Did people do this and would it make any sense?
Well, you know, it wouldn't be a bad idea if you actually got a mild case, but what if it wasn't a mild case and you actually made somebody sick and it got worse? So I'm really not advocating that, but there was a lot of traffic on the net about that.
Could be a kill your friends and neighbors party.
Exactly right.
That's a bad thing. 808-0810 is the number. You can also email me at kgoradio.com. Frank calling from Spokane, Washington. Welcome to the program.
Hi, how are you today?
Very well.
You know, the thing that concerns me most about this multi-billion-dollar vaccine industry is that the laboratory that patented the vaccine for this supposedly new a virus that no one had ever seen before patented the virus vaccine a year before the virus was identified. Now, can you explain that? Because there's, as you know, the Internet has a lot of people circulating the idea that this is a pandemic created by a corporation for the idea of profit to market the vaccine.
Thank you, Frank. All right, let's get right to that. Ms. Phelps, what about that?
You know, it's very interesting. Today I happen to be in Sacramento, California, for one of the public comment sessions that CDC was hosting, and there was a lot of conversation about that particular issue. Now, I believe the company that was had a patent for an H1N1 vaccine. And by the way, H1N1 has been circulating in the U.S. for the last 30 years, not the type of H1N1 we currently are faced with, but there has been a circulating H1N1 virus. So I think part of the confusion in the general public is they don't understand that there's been a change in the virus, and this is actually swine plus avian plus human is our current pandemic. But to that end, the company that was supposed to have created this vaccine, Baxter, is not even one of the vaccine manufacturers that are producing for the United States. So I think there's a lot of misinformation or a lot of confusion that you read out there. As whether this is an introduced virus, you know, I think that's a really interesting concept. I have a hard time fathoming that, but a lot of speculation that I've read on the Internet.
Now, by an introduced virus, what you're saying is they come up with a cure and they deliberately release it into the population to create a market for their product?
Right, a form of bioterrorism. I mean, there is a fair
number of... That's just wrong.
About that.
That's just wrong.
Well, it's an interesting idea. I mean, I don't think... you have to be extremely sophisticated to do that, and I can't imagine that would happen. But it certainly is. There's some speculation about that.
808-0810 is the number. Helene calling from Berkeley. Welcome to the program.
Yes, good evening, David. Long-time caller,
Yeah, we know. Long-time listener, first-time caller. Welcome to the show.
Yes, I'm nervous. Well, I wanted to ask about the swine flu. I am diabetic, diabetic too, 64 years old. And I was wondering, I was thinking of visiting my sister in Paris, and am I more at a risk because I'm going to take the plane and I'm going to be in Paris for 6 weeks and then returning like the end of October?
That's a really good question, because I think anybody who's traveling, especially going abroad, always thinks about that. I think there's certainly no reason to not take your trip, but I think what I would do is I would be really smart when you do. Like, for example, when you get into the plane, I would carry with you some those sanitary wipes, and I would wipe down everything. I'd wipe down the arms of your seat, the tray table, because, you know, they're not cleaning them like they used to, and, you know, who knows who was sitting there before you. So I would clean your whole area really well. I'd be really careful about what you touch on the plane, and wash your hands frequently. I would carry hand sanitizer, and I would probably also carry some masks with me, some surgical masks, because if somebody started coughing or something like that, I'd probably feel personally better if I could actually protect myself. And I think the same thing is that when you're in Europe, to sort of be smart, wash your hands a lot. If you're taking the metro in Paris, again, avoid touching a lot of things, and certainly don't touch your face. Carry some hand sanitizer. And lastly, if you see a lot of illness going on in Paris, just like they're advising people in India right now, avoid really crowded places, because you really don't know who you're going to be standing next to. So I think you can go have a great time with your family and just be smart.
Helene, thank you very much for that call. And for a diabetic to another, get a flu shot. Real, real important with this particular disorder. Our guest is Regina Phelps. We're talking about swine flu. Your questions and comments are very welcome. 808-0810 is the number. You can also email us. This is KGO. I'm David Lazarus. I'll tell you right now, lime in the coconut will not help you with swine flu. But here's someone who will help you, Dr. Bill. He'll be joining us right at the top of the hour. 808-0810 is the number. Dory calling from Odessa, Washington. Welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for your program. It's very educational, and I appreciate it. Some years ago, I don't know, maybe over 20 years ago, there was a swine flu epidemic, so-called, and many people that had the vaccination ended up with a Guillain-Barré syndrome. I personally had a relative hospitalized for a year with it, and I'm wondering if they're seeing any signs of that with this vaccination testing.
Thank you, Dory. Appreciate that. Regina Phelps.
In 1976, there was an outbreak in a military base of several individuals with swine flu, and because of the nature of that virus, it caused the government to really go into overdrive to produce a vaccine. And that particular vaccination, there was millions of people in the U.S. vaccinated, and your caller is absolutely spot on. There were about 580 people that actually developed Guillain-Barré, which is a neurological disease or a syndrome. And currently, right now, in flu vaccinations, about 1 to 2 people on the regular seasonal flu vaccines acquire Guillain-Barré, or what's called GBS, as part of an after effect or a side effect of the vaccine. That particular case in 1976 was a major issue, and currently right now, vaccine safety is a big priority for CDC. At this conference I was at today, they spoke extensively about that. There are clinical trials going on right now. They want to make sure the vaccine is safe before they actually release it out for widespread immunization. So I think there's a lot of concern about that, and they certainly don't want to have a repeat of that 1976 event.
And very quickly, when I go out and get my flu shot this season, is it going to be a swine flu shot?
No, what you're going to get, thank you for asking that, David. There's going to be two different flu campaigns. There'll be a seasonal flu shot, which will be coming out very, very soon, which is our usual regular annual flu shot. Everybody should take one of those shots. Very important to get that vaccine, especially this year, because it will minimize just one more disease you're likely to get. Once the flu vaccines are available, they will be probably two shots. One is to really prime your immune system, and the second is going to be a booster, just like they do with kids, because nobody's ever seen this disease before, so we're going to all need to have two shots.
All right, Regina Phelps, thank you very much for joining us.
You're welcome. My pleasure.
And thank you for being here. I'll see you again next week. This show is produced by Jay Westerling. Anthony Young is the engineer. I'm David Lazarus. This is KGO, San Francisco, San Jose, and Oakland.